Blog Talk Radio.
And with that energetic beginning, and thank you, Mr. Mazursky, for that wonderful music. Welcome to Exploring a Crisis with Captain B2, Same Walk, and Mr. Dan Deschino. Attendance call. Dan, are you out there?
Hey, attendance call. Yes, I am standing at attention right here for you.
Yes,
everything
but
is your... Were you going to ask, is my son listening? I don't know if he is tonight. He might be.
Yeah, your
might be. He usually does. Yeah, I'm not sure who else is listening, but yes, he usually does. He is my fan club. He came to my band played a gig today, and he came to see me play as well too. So we're paying the favors for. Yeah, we're paying the favors for all the times I went to see him.
Was it a good gig?
It was. We've actually had two of our best gigs ever. Last week we got called last minute. We played for 45 minutes, got paid $1,000. And this week we played most by far. Usually I'm used to getting paid nothing. So that was a good gig. This one was a block party. It was fun. It was outdoors, and there was a couple hundred people there, and we were just one of the bands, but it was a lot of fun. So yeah, we had two really good gigs. Two really good gigs, yes. Just like a farmer outstanding in his field.
Hey, some days you just live right. So
that's right. And then I'm capping off the day with this beautiful show we have.
Yeah, you betcha. And is our inimitable Miss Pam with us?
Of course.
No, it wouldn't be a party without you, girlfriend.
Well, right. Thank you. It's good to be here. Good to hear you both.
Yeah, you betcha. Oh, good. Well, here we are again. It's another 2 weeks, and here we are. And tonight we have two carryovers from Ramiro Veras. And after that, we'll tackle our featured artist, Fernando Botero, and his rather corpulent figures. So let's, if no one has any other things to contribute, let's dive right in. And not Ramirio. We have leftovers from Gediminas Prakadigios. So I like the tongue twister artists.
I've noticed that.
I know. Where's the John Smith, the painter? We haven't had him yet.
Yes, it's Ellie. So
yeah, right. We need to dig him up.
John Smith, the painter. We need him, get to find one.
I'll see what I can do. How's that?
Excellent, excellent.
All right. Okay, we have two carryovers, and would you like to kick us off, please?
Of course, yes, we do have two carryovers that we're excited about. So I'm going to post one, and as an honored veteran, Bobby, I'll give you the first read, but I have this feeling, this is my sixth sense, this is my Star Wars The Force speaking, that we might have a caller that called in.
That'd be lovely. I always like callers, always like to hear other people's contributions. So we have.
Yes. Do we have a caller, Pam?
We do not have a caller yet, but
oh.
I will ring the doorbell when we do.
Oh, I don't know what that sound I heard was then. Okay, just ignore it. It must have been in my brain. I don't know what I heard. I thought I heard a sound. Anyway, yes. So if you would like to start us off,
Have no fear, Dan. Have no fear, Dan. Drugs and therapy will help this.
I'm all over that, trust me, let me tell you. At the same time, too, is the best way to do it. But this is, it's from 2 weeks ago. This is by Lenka Shells, and this is called Beautiful Death. And Bobby, you can go ahead and read that. It would be great.
Beautiful Death. It's inspired by prompt 2. Death is ugly, smugly infuriating, while debating on dictating my hating. Such a devastating way. My gateway is far away, but I'll obey to portray my weight. Someday on a stroke play, proving my worth down to earth to my natural net worth on a daily basis, on a flirtatious basis. Where's my precious Daisy, my favorite Daisy on Navy? Hypervelocity is an atrocity when I must go fast, faster than the newscast to be an outcast, to contrast my half-mast. That's it, I think. I want my death dressed in depth, unaware of its fascinating, dazzling, channeling my gambling. End poem.
Great read, Bobby. Very interesting poem here with lots of great rhymes. Pam, if we could start off with you.
Yes, absolutely. I have to say, first of all, that I agree with you, Dan. There is definitely a lot of great rhymes. And Bobby, you did a wonderful read of that. And I like that it had inner and end rhyme. One of the things that stood out to me about this poem is the juxtaposition between such a serious topic as death and the playing around with almost, I don't think frivolous is the right word, but there's very playful language. My favorite Daisy on a Maisie, ugly, smugly. That sounds like a Dr. Seuss type word, to be honest. And I like it. I absolutely like it. I like that someone here writes about the devastation of death in the way that they're playing with language. I also really like the use of the word hypervelocity. On such a devastating way, my gateway is far away, but I'll obey to betray my weight someday on a stroke play, proving my worth down to earth. I feel like in part those lines are saying that I'm not going to rush death. I'm not going to, wish for it. It'll come when it comes. And, there's nothing I can do except for, live life to the fullest. And to contrast my cast on my half mass, that's it. I think I want my death dressed in depth, unaware of its fantasizing, dazzling, channeling my gambling. Wonderful, I thought, on the idea of, taking those risks, those gambles, and, I don't know, it's absolutely intriguing to me. I love the play with words on a dark topic, so very well done.
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly what I was thinking. It's a very dark topic, and he's talking about death is ugly, right? Smugly. I do like the word smugly. Infuriating. But then talking about while debating, am I dictating, am I hating such a debt? My gateway is far away. So thinking like, you know what, I'll be there, but I'm not yet. I'm not there, but here's some things that scare me. And at the very end, you know, unaware of my fascinating, dazzling, channeling my gambling. You know, and we gamble every day. You know, I got to be telling you, sometimes I'll sit there and I'll be driving or something and I'll, you know, stop short for a second, right? And then I'll think like, if I happen to have been looking away at that time, I might have just died in this car accident. You know what I mean? So every second from now on is a gift, right? Because that could have happened, right? So it's you know, it is a very dark topic, but the way that he's kind of fancy free, almost like he's singing a song, like skipping around and kind of almost laughing at death by it with the playful way of the words is very interesting. You can take it multiple ways. I can almost take it like laughing, like, "Huh, I'm not worried about you," or maybe trying to hide a little and be almost a little insanity of what you have to think about with the way death is. So it was very interesting, and the rhyming was spot on too. It was very, very fun. And well done. So yeah, same thoughts I was having, Pam, that you were having. Absolutely. Bobby, you got to read it and did an awesome job. What do you
Thank
think?
You. I like the irony of the title. I remember the prompt. It was the shrouded figure that this poem was inspired by. It starts out very, very seriously, but then it launches into what I think is almost black humor. It's a very nimble write. Person has, the author has really balanced the assonance and the alliteration beautifully. I mean, it is in the read. It's almost melodic in the way that it is structured and. My gateway is far away, I'll obey to portray my weight someday on a stroke play. Great assonance, really, really well done. Like Pam said, the wordplay, hypervelocity is an atrocity, I must go fast, channeling my gambling. This is a very clever piece of writing. And I really enjoyed the reading. I really enjoyed the message too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very clever. I like this poem a lot. Cool. So let's move on here with life. And all right, that was not a noise I think I was making up in my head, right?
Trick
that was
train.
An actual call, so I think.
That was not your imagination. It is Lou. Welcome, Lou. Glad you could join us.
Hi, Dan. Hello, everybody. Hey, Daniel. Hey, Bobby.
Hey,
Lou. Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Hey, what's happening? So glad you called in early.
I got back early. I tried to hurry up.
Excellent. Excellent.
The important question, how are your toes? How are your toes?
Fractured. Swollen, doesn't look like a toe. It looks like a thumb. Oh my god.
Oh my goodness.
What happened? Did you hurt yourself?
Well, I got some new shoes and I got a blister, so I put on some soft slippers.
Ow.
And the doorbell rang. It was the FedEx man, and of course I tried to hobble to the door as fast as I could, and I hit my toe on the coffee table. And
ow.
Went to the doctor. The doctor said, "You did a number. Your toe feels crunchy. Go to the X-ray." And sure,
oof.
She called me back fractured.
That's just that's your reminder that you're human. That's what that is.
And you can't cast a toe.
I don't know if this will make you guys squeal, but I did it once. I had an ice chopper. You probably know where I'm going with this.
Luckily, I didn't do anything bad.
It just hurt really bad, and it was just a little. I don't even think it was fractured, but like I was like, "Wow, how did I even hit my foot?" Like I understand I have 12 and a half size feet, but still, please come on. Like how stupid am I to do that? So yes, I don't think I fractured it.
But you know what it is?
So
you're not really. You're not really paying attention. You're just trying to get your work done. You're, you know, I'm
it
trying
really
to get to the door.
Though, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, the FedEx man, if you don't get to the door before he leaves, he takes off.
Yep.
Crunchy
that, you know,
toes,
what,
huh?
That seems like a loss of FedEx to me, if I ever heard of one.
Well, you got to remember, there's a rule that's immutable. That just, there are certain things in life that should never be crunchy. Mashed potatoes, yellow, cream cheese,
cream corn,
and toes.
And milk. Milk as
milk.
Well.
Yeah, crunchy milk. Yeah.
If milk is hard, throw it away. Anyway, cool.
Grossed out with that sci-fi where the aliens drink rotten milk to get drunk. And you could just see them slurping down the chunks, and it used to make me so sick I could gag while I watched them.
Yep. I'm obsessed with smelling the milk and tasting it before I drink it, because you never know.
Exactly.
Anyway, we are very glad to have you here, Luke, and your reward is you get to read the poem that we very close up. This is our last one from today, and don't be by Eric Daniel Herman. And don't be scared by the title. The rest of the words are a little easier to read. But I will let you read the one I just posted.
You're terrible. You would give me one that I... Okay. This is written by Eric Daniel Herman.
Yes.
And it is titled Insterquilinus Inventitur. A specter hangs over the globe.
Well done.
Casting an everlong shadow from capsule thrones. Gray faces glow and hang low, glued to the shimmering spectacle. Hospital beds all occupied. Needles lie sidewalk to sidewalk, spreading across the line which divides. Skid Row floods the city plateau. Tent cities spread and grow, with empty apartments counted as assets, not homes. Drone strikes burst water vessels exploding into legless and headless children. Blue planet in the dark starry cosmos, spinning in flames with a new green god to blame. Electrical hypothesis con artists dabble in a chemical, neurochemical experience, playing Bolivian games with wireless airwave chains, wage slaved peasant to bring. End poem.
Great read. And I tried to look up those words at the beginning. I'm not sure, but it's very interesting. I love interesting words, so that it really intrigued me on this poem. And it's very interesting, and it goes on a lot. I mean, this is from our last show, and he used multiple pictures, and I think he hits a lot of words here. I mean, a lot of thoughts. Part of me is thinking that he is talking about what's going on in Ukraine, but then some of it in the middle really reminded me of just homelessness. Anyway, hospital beds occupied, needles lie sidewalk to sidewalk, spreading across the line which divides skid. Row floods the city plateau, tents spread and grow. I mean, I think he's talking about war, but, you know, it reminded me just of homelessness. And, you know, and here in Boston where I am, we don't have it that bad, but I've seen documentaries and seen places like in L.A. where there's just this miles of cities of people, and it's it really breaks my heart to see that. And, you know, if he is talking about war, you know, us creating that on our own is just gross. And, you know, there's something about homeless that just so breaks my heart. It's something I've always tried to help whenever I see somebody, because it just seems like there should be some way that nobody in this country should be homeless. There really should be some way that shouldn't happen. So, you know, that's what stuck out with me. I know there's a lot more going on in this poem, but that just kind of stuck out to me, and that's what it made me think of. So, Eric, if you're listening, awesome, awesome job. And Pam, I'm going to go back to you.
All right. Well, first of all, great read, Luke. I do have to agree with you there, Daniel. There is a certain sense of idea of homelessness. I feel like this part of this touches on pollution, which with the mention of Blue Planet and the dark starry cosmos spinning in flames of the new green god, the Blaine. It was interesting because I don't know exactly what Insterloquist inventor means, but if you put Insterloquist together, it's actually the name of the Greek god of odor. So I don't know if that applies to any of it, but if it did, I would think that, something to do with a foul stench, which I think applies to both pollution and homelessness. This was particularly hard-hitting and difficult to deal with emotionally when you read lines like drone strikes, burst water vessels exploding into legless and headless children, electrical hypnotist con artist dabbled in alchemical neurochemical experiments. You feel like it's all about how people get treated not like they're human. At least kind of that's the feeling I get. Like whether it's war or homelessness or whatever this is dealing with, it really boils down to the whole idea that there are people being treated as if they don't have the right to be treated as human beings. So just a powerful right and very well done.
Yeah, I agree, Pam. I lose sleep many nights sometimes thinking about if I think about or see things on atrocities like that. It's so upsetting, and it's but important to talk about. Lou, you got to read it, and as always, did an awesome job. What are your thoughts on it?
To me, this has to do. Because I went and looked up what Pavlovian means, and it's a way of conditioning humans. And, and you look at those pictures, there's a division. To me, it's not just homelessness, but it's like it says right here, tent cities spread and grow with empty apartments because nobody can afford to live in them. And it says counted as assets, not homes. It's the conditioning of the people, what we see going on, what we see, the brainwashing that he's talking about. And, we look at a lot of movies and a lot of things. I was looking at the pictures he chose where there's this dry, huge dry area, and then there's the water. One of the most valuable things that you will ever find, which I have seen, is water. The lack, not being able to water, which, to me, in some ways, you can't control the people, so you drug them. When you can't drug them, you blow them up, because you can't control a mob of people that are hungry and that are thirsty. And he says right here, he blames it on the new green god to blame, how money just divides humanity.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I agree. I think those last three lines are brilliant. Playing Pavlovian games while wireless airways changed wage slave peasant brains.
Brains.
I don't want to get political, but if you watch those hearings on what Trump, on the riots, Fox News during that time had 2.5 hours of commercial free programming because they didn't want people to change it and go watch that. So the commercials you
hide
even
the truth.
See as yeah, well, commercials can even be they play even games. You've probably all seen the little things where people are doing with food. Like if you look at a burger on the commercial, it's not really a burger. It's painted. It's like made to So it's all there's so much of even if it's somewhat innocent. There's so much of that. Going around, it's interesting. This is a brilliant poem. Anyway, Bobby, take us home with your comments.
This is a very complex rite.
Yes, very cerebral.
Yeah, very, very, very nuanced. It does. Electrical hypnotist, con artist, dabble in alchemical, neurochemical experiments, playing Pavlovian games with wireless airwave change, wage slave peasant braid. I mean, just that last stanza, just the layering in this piece, and that last stanza, there is a lot being said and a lot going on in this piece. Drone strikes, first water vessels exploding into legless and headless children. Visual imagery is stark, visceral, almost raw. This is an impressive rite. It makes you stop and think. You kind of have to examine every stanza individually and cerebrate over it, because it has so much to say. Very impressive piece. Really glad that this was contributed to our contest. And well done, Eric Daniel Herman.
Absolutely, absolutely. And now we will go on to our newest contest. And Bobby, if you want to introduce the artist.
Ba-da-ba. Okay. This was a little bit... This was a little bit of a departure. I took Botero because the man actually has a great deal of work in museums, quite well known. I personally don't. The artwork does not appeal to me, but it's sort of, you know, it's just kind of like the way I used to draw stuff when I was in third grade. But that's okay. he's got an eye for people that he sees things beyond them and with just the surface. He's considered the most recognized and quoted living artist in Latin America. I mean, that man doesn't deserve a contest. Who the hell does? His artwork can be found in places of visual places around, highly visible places around the world, like Park Avenue, the Champs-Élysées in Paris. He's done exhibits. It's very stylized. So I tossed it out there and wanted to see what people would do with it. And interestingly enough, I don't know if it was noticed, but when I did the introductory artwork, that I always put something up there with the artist's picture on it. If you look at the other pictures around it, the artwork, several of them are self-portraits done in his own style. So I thought that was interesting. He does not exclude himself from his eye, which I thought was pretty bloody marvelous. So I tossed it out there, and we had some interesting questions. So let's get started with him.
Absolutely, yeah. Let's do that. Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. So, hold on a second here. I lost my place. Here we go. So, Pam, I'm going to have you read the first one for us if you can. This is called The Beautiful Elise by Vicky Moore.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. The Beautiful Elise by Vicky Moore. Buxom and curvy, the world calls her fat, but she knows how she feels and will have none of that. She loves every curve, every roll, every dimple. The only thing she wouldn't like is a pimple. She wears a tight dress and a bow in her hair. Her blonde hair is loose and her skin is so fair. She needs wear no makeup. Her cheeks are soft pink, and she doesn't care what others might think. For she has such self-confidence, such self-esteem. She knows she's the woman in all of their dreams. Elise strolled into the dance hall, her head held high. And all of the men were heard getting outside. Elise knows that beauty is only skin deep, and her real allure lies in the way that she thinks. She swirls and she twirls on the dance floor tonight, and all of the men seem to hold her so tight. She laughs and sings loud, not caring a whit if some of the women think she should just sit. Elise knows her happiness shines in her eyes. and nothing depends on her weight or dress size. She is happy-go-lucky and proud of herself. She'll not be a wallflower put on a shelf. Buxom and curvy, the world calls her fat. But she knows how she feels and will have none of that. End poem.
That was a phenomenal read. Thank you, Pam. And, yeah, anybody following along, this is prompt 13, which I think she described it beautifully. And it is very interesting. You know, it's been said to death how the media, we were just talking about, puts the, for both men and women, puts these, standards for people to try to live up to. The beauty is only skin deep is really a true saying, in my opinion. You know, I've seen very beautiful women who are just jerks. And to me, that's like the most unattractive thing you can ever have. You know, beauty is different for everybody. It really is. It's way more than physical appearance. It is the whole person, no matter who you're talking about, again, men and women, in my opinion. And I think that, you know, people should be confident in who they are, because you are who you are, and nobody is perfect, and you know, everybody has their faults, and you're given what you're given. The judgment and the standards that are put in our culture in America, it was always interesting throughout history. You can see different cultures and standards, right? You go back to the 20s and 30s, and everybody had to look a certain way, and every man wore a hat, and every man had a mustache or the exact same haircut, and you know, women had the same type of thing. It was these, you know, specific standards for whatever reason culture put in there. I always thought it was interesting. I forget which Jane Austen novel where. I think it was Pride and Prejudice, where Elizabeth had like a sun glow to her, and they were making fun of her because of that. The other woman, they said she should be pale, look like she's never been outside. And that's, you know, so different cultures, different times have different, standards, which is, we have to get by that. But anyway, that's my thoughts. I thought this was beautiful and the rhyming was great. Lou, what are your thoughts?
Can you hear me?
Lou, you, are you there?
Daniel, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, I don't know what's wrong with my phone. What I liked about this poem is what she brought out. You know, inner beauty to me is more beautiful than the outward look. You know, like you were bringing up, I've seen beautiful men, beautiful women, and they are the worst jerks. And, you know, to me, that discolors how I see them. They're not attractive to me. And what's attractive to me is personality and the way someone thinks. And she puts it here. Elise knows that beauty is only skin deep. Her real allure lies in the way she thinks. She swirls and twirls on the dance floor tonight, and all of the men seem to hold her so tight. You know, so it's her inner beauty that she's showing. She's not afraid of who she is, what she is. And society, you know, looks at women differently. Like before, it was full women figure Marilyn Monroe, and then we went to Twiggy.
Yep.
You know, so it's society, telling us what is beautiful instead of us judging the person by their own personality. And I think Elise has a wonderful personality.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Great comments. Pam, you did an awesome job reading it. What were your thoughts?
Well, I have to agree with Lou that, and you, Dan, that, beauty can be both on the outside and the inside. And, you can't always judge a book by its cover. I found this interesting because I do have to agree there is definitely a lot of self-confidence in this character. You know, she loves who she is. She accepts her and loves her. Not only accepts, but loves her body. I like that she dances. I like, as far as the poem goes, besides nice rhyme, wonderful rhyme, that she has the same lines at the beginning and the end, which I thought really added an element of completeness. One of the factors of this poem that I found really intriguing and thought-provoking is the lines, she loves every curve, every roll, every dimple. The only thing she wouldn't like is a pimple. I thought that had fun humor to it, but I also thought it made a serious point in the idea that even the most confident of people have their things that they just don't like the idea of. Like, she could handle herself being overweight, plump, you know, she didn't mind that, but if she got one pimple, she wasn't going to like that. And I found that really added a different element to the write. So I thought this was very well done.
Very interesting, very interesting. Yeah, great comments so far. Bobby, what's happened?
Oh, I think this is a stunning piece. I really love the way Vicki has expressed the inner beauty, the inner confidence that she has. She told us how she feels and will have none of that. She loves everything. And this is a woman who exudes her self-confidence. She likes herself. She respects herself. That shows from the inside out. That is the true beauty. And she she exudes it, and she laughs and sings aloud, not caring a whit if some of the women think she should just sit. She knows who she is, and is not only happy with it, but proud of it. And there's a lot to be said for this. I really enjoyed this piece. It has a lot of positive things to say.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Great stuff so far. And let's continue on with life here. I'm going to post on right now. And hi to Casey, who just joined. I don't know if she's listening to the show or not, but she's on the board. So I'll say virtual hi to her anyway. This is a nice little brevity by the master of brevities, Rosewinter 515. And I'll give it a read. It's for prompt number 20. It's called Cyber Cafe. Window on the world, watching people passing by, rhythm of my life, hurrying along to work, heartbeat, hip-hop, off to shop. End poem. And I really like Rose Winter's poem. She's very playful and very fun. She pretty much always has a very positive outlook on life. And, you know, I could just see myself sitting here just kind of watching people kind of moving along. And it is a kind of a heartbeat of the city, you always say, is the streets of the city, right? That's the blood and the heartbeat of the city is everybody running around. So I thought this was fun, as usual, from her and beautifully done. Pam, let's start with you.
Yeah, I do enjoy Rose Winter's brevities, and this is great all the way through. And I have to agree, it does have it's playful, it's fun. You know, even the title lends itself to the poem with the idea of, you know, somebody just sitting in that cyber cafe watching the world go by. I really particularly liked the middle long rhythm of my life. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Pam. And Lou, go over to you.
What I really enjoyed about this is that even this brevity, you can see every detail in it. You know, just sitting there in the cafe, playing music, watching people go to work, you know, coming from work, and there's something about when you hear somebody playing music at a cafe, it just tends to lighten your step. And so I liked it there where, you know, he says the heartbeat to hip-hop off to shop. You know, that feeling, you know, it's not they're shopping, they're working, but just listening to his music will give that extra rhythm. Well pinned. You read it nicely.
Thank you. Thank you. And Bobby, let you wrap it up as always.
I also enjoyed Rose Winter's brevity. She really does have quite a way with it. She does such economical writes, yet with just a few words and lines, she does very successfully paint a very concise word picture. Window on the world, watching people passing by. I mean, we've all done it. It's some of the great places to people watch, airports, malls, Starbucks, rhythm of my life. So you can see that this is something that she engages in and enjoys it, praying along to work, hip, heartbeat, hip-hop, off to shop. A little playful ending there. You know, the people watching is over, and it's time to go earn a living. But I really enjoyed this. I like what she had to say, and I like that she did it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bobby. And we are in for a treat because we got one up by Gerald Green called Annual Checkup, and he has our one SoundCloud for the night. So, Pam, if you would play that for us, that would be great.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. All right. Here we go.
Welcome to Gerald Green Poetry. Annual Checkup, written and read by Gerald Green. Afraid of death with every breath, I'm dying sooner than my friends. While food has been my one desire, I've burned my candle at both ends. The doctor says I eat too much, and what I eat is bad for me. He shakes his head when looking at my latest angiography. A pastry here and donut there, it all seems innocent enough. One, however, doesn't hinder craving for more sugared stuff. And so I fail, consume some more, indulge my hearty appetite, and lick my fingers when I'm done. A sweet and satisfying sight. Life is one extended meal, at least it should be after all, consuming more of what tastes good, ignoring high cholesterol. Triglycerides are off the chart, and arteries are clogged again, as weight has hit a record high. I swear to change, but only when I'm in his office on the scale. But once I'm home, and memory fades, temptation visits, small at first, and then my appetite cascades. Just one more time I'll have a steak, a primal urge I can't combat. It feels great to chew the meat while tasting gristle, sauce, and fat. I'll have a salad for my health, topped with croutons, cheese, and dressing, with a buttered roll for sopping, ending with a solemn blessing. I choose my diet carefully, ignoring whole wheat, rye, and bran. I'm just full-figured, nothing more. A typical American. Visit YouTube for more Gerald Green poetry.
I swear I've heard his voice on, like, audiobooks. Maybe he just has one of those voices, but it's just such a mesmerizing voice. I love his reads. I thought this was very interesting because it was fun. In a strange way, it was so lighthearted and just and so well done with the rhyming, but also doing a commentary on the way Americans eat, you know, with the fast food and the and you know, I remember I was thinking about this before, a kid, though, when I used to have the food pyramid and how that's all changed. it has. It's totally changed. And you know, just the bad eating habits that are so easy to get into. I mean, I do it. I have to stop myself from kind of eating, and sometimes I'm a little older, so I'm trying to, you know, keep the weight down, but it's hard, you know. And again, just I so wish I bought this book a long time ago. I saw this book, and it was just a picture book, and what it had was, it every page it had a picture of pantries around the world. They went into some people's houses, and they had them empty their pantries and put them on the front lawn and took pictures of them. That was the whole book. And the only countries with basically all prepackaged stuff were the United States, Canada, Great Britain, and Australia. And by far, the United States had basically all stuff. You know, everybody else had bulk foods and kind of fresh foods. It was very interesting to me, and it is so easy to just kind of, I mean, I grew up on McDonald's, you know. I haven't eaten it in forever, but it's, you know, quarter pounders of cheese, large fries. When I was a kid, I was in high school, went to McDonald's all the time, and I don't even know if I consider it food anymore. You know, some of those packaged stuff we eat, and you read the amount of ingredients on like a cereal box or something, and it's, you know, it's very, very interesting. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I love Gerald's work, and I really love his reading. So, excellent job. And Lou, let's start with you. Woohoo.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, that's good. You know, I was looking at this picture and thinking about his poem. Usually at a fast food restaurant, you usually see crumbs or pieces of pastry or a French fry, something on the floor. And
yeah.
What cracked me up about this was I see cigarettes, so this made me think he was smoking before his doctor's appointment. And then there looks like, when you blow the picture up, it looks like there's a corn on the cob, like there's corn on the floor, and the bird doesn't even want to eat it, because with his poem, it made me think he wants to, you know, even the bird wants the delicious, sweet breads and pastries. Because it didn't show him eating anything, so I thought he mashed, you know, just my imagination went elsewhere with his poem and the picture, and I thought, you know, I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. It made me think of this guy's fat and happy, playing music, eating French fries, loving life. So, yeah, it was interesting. Thanks, Lou. And Pam. Did Pam step out? I don't know if she stepped out for a second.
I don't know.
No, I was just on mute.
Ah.
And before I comment, though, I'd like to welcome Gray to the show. Welcome, Gray. Glad you could join us.
Hey, Gray.
Yay. Thank you. Hi, Pam.
Hey.
Hi, Lou.
Hey.
Hi, Daniel.
Hey, Gray.
Hi, Bobby.
Thanks
Hi.
For joining. I didn't even
How
hear the little beep beep.
Yes,
you were very
thank
stealthy. You.
You
just jumped in. And,
yeah, yeah, he was on stealth mode.
Yeah. I only ring the doorbell if the person shows up after I comment, because if I'm going to comment, then I know I have the floor and can just say, hey, this person is doing this. Yeah. But anyway, this poem, I liked it. It was a serious social commentary on the common American, the typical American diet, that, you know, as you said, overindulges in fast food and, you know, appetite, the prepackaged food. And what I really like is, I'm in his office on the scale, but once I'm home and memory fades, temptation visits small at first, and then my appetite cascades. And I think that is so relatable. I think many of us who, you know, have been to the doctor's office and said, okay, you need to be watching your eating, and, you know, we nod and we smile, or we, you know, maybe even agree with the doctor and say, yes, you're absolutely right, and I feel, you know, ready to do it. And then all of a sudden you get home and you're faced with all that delicious food, and it's just not as easy, because temptation is right there in your face. And I also really liked that he wrote to the picture, but he didn't really, you know, like he put a story into the picture, and I thought that was very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And great. Did you get a chance to listen or read the poem?
I had a chance to read it, yeah. I thought it was a fantastic take on obesity in modern times. It was fantastic, right? Very humorous.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's definitely a problem with that, as there probably always has been, at least for a while. And Bobby.
Well, I thought this was a scathing indictment of American eating habits. I like the way they say that talking about all the different things that we're supposed to, that we say we're not going to do and that we are going to do, and then the minute we get home, I swear I will change, but only when I'm in his office on the scale. And once I'm home and memory fades, temptation visits small at first, and then my appetite cascades. Oh, my goodness. I don't think any one of us has it. You know, it's just like you have a problem when chocolate knows you by name. You know, it's like, and you walk by the closet and you hear the little whisper from inside, and especially, and if it's chocolate cake, forget it, you know. It's like, oh, my God. I can't have it in the house. It's like a Jones. I can't have it around, you know, because the only problem with this stuff is it gets in my mouth.
Yeah, I cheat when I go to the doctor's blood tests and eat oatmeal like 3 weeks before I go. I'll admit that. It happens. I do. Hey, it looks like cholesterol's great. See? I do all the time. So
I really like the acerbic character in this. I mean, just it is a real indictment of the stories we tell ourselves.
Also, go to the doctor in the morning and don't drink a lot of water, and your blood pressure's lower. That also works.
Yeah, don't drink coffee either. Yep.
Don't drink coffee, and then you get a better blood pressure. Yeah, it just makes me feel better when I walk out, like I'm healthy or something. All right, cool. Excellent. So, yeah, I feel you on that one, Bobby. I get you. All right, awesome. And, Gray, since you're the newest member here, I got one up for you by Pink Furry 5. This is a fun one, if you don't mind reading it.
Okay, sure. This is called Potterismo is for People with Soul. SpongeBob SquarePants must have originated with Potterismo. I can only imagine how the responses by the socialized. They would not have understood the blockish faces or the stocky, blocky bodies drawn by Angelo. People with art in their souls readily understood it, flocking to his shows in droves, duplicating and imitating. His art is not for everybody, but it is for those with soul, which is why it is recognized all over the world. End poem.
Excellent read. Thanks, Gray. Pam, let's start with you.
Yeah, I always enjoy Pink Fairy's writing. I thought this was a wonderful brevity, and I like that she paid tribute to the artist and the way that the spirit of the artist, you know, the way his artwork really speaks to the people and to people who have soul. I really particularly like that she made that point with people with art in their souls readily understood it, flocking to his shows in droves, duplicating and imitating. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Excellent. Thanks, Pam. Very interesting. Gray, you got to read it? What did you think?
Oh, sorry, I was talking to mute. I thought it was a wonderful, imaginative tribute to Fernando Argulo and his art. Just beautiful.
Yes, it was fun, and I'm a fan of any poem that starts off with SpongeBob SquarePants. That always makes me happy. And Lou, what do you think?
I thought that Gray did a wonderful job in reading reading this poem, and I really enjoyed Pink Fairy. What I liked about this is that, you know, when people look at his artwork, all they see is somebody that's fat or unhealthy or something like that. But what I see is a burst of color. It's like he painted the energy of the people that he saw, and he just splashed it, you know. And in what I think what he's doing, he's asking you to look a little deeper than what you actually see, you know, because his art's beautiful. He even made, like Bobby pointed out, there's statues. He made statues of these paintings. I did read that at one of the places that that he had his artwork, they did blow up one of the statues, and he took that blown up statue and remade the statue and the artwork. You know, it's just his way of showing what his artistic eyes see. And I think she caught that wonderfully.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's interesting about him is that he has, you know, the people are big, but everything, but other things around them are small for certain reasons. So, like in this picture here, you know, the book actually looks kind of small, and even the mountains and trees are just small. So it's just it's interesting. It's kind of almost, it's not as much that they're obese, but almost that they're accented a little bit. So it is interesting. Cool. And Bobby.
Finally, she did some research on Botero, and included that what she found in her poetry, which I really appreciated. I thought that anyone that takes the featured artist and does a little bit more digging, that's why I put something out there about the artist, and I give them sources, and for them to go looking into it, it really, I think it enhances the poetry. Flocking to a show in droves, duplicating and imitating. His art is not for everybody, truly, but it's for those with soul, which is why it is recognized all over the world. Very nicely done, a nice homage to the featured artist, and actually a very well-done brevity.
Absolutely, absolutely. Cool. And Bobby, I'm going to stick with you, and I got one here by Colap for you to read. And don't be scared by the title. There's only a little bit of Spanish in it, so.
That's okay. I think I can handle it. I took my multilingual. Okay.
If you notice, I very strategically give all the hard ones to other people, so that's what.
Shame on you.
Neutron.
Now we know your secret.
She always saves the tough ones for me. Okay. We have Senor.
I'm just going in order. It's just, you know, it's luck of the draw. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a good story. Stick with it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Senor y Senora Salceda. I call up. Senor y Senora Salceda live in the up-and-coming quarter of Bogota and drive the trendiest car of the year. Senora Salceda, with the green light of her senor, is allowed to shop with a blank check at the poshest department store in the country's capital. With strict typewritten instructions, their cook serves them only prime beef and imported foie gras and selected French cépage. With their country's grapes, produce decent Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay for Señor and Señora Salceda. Want only the best schools and foods that money can provide for them and their progenitors. Hopefully for this Salceda Jr. and more to come. Ojalá se Dios quiere. Amen. End poem.
Excellent reading. Your Spanish was fantastic. I was pretty impressed with that. Actually, I would never have been able to read it like that. So great, great, great job. And Gray, let's start with you.
Well, her wording was fantastic. I mean, it was a beautiful read by you, Bobby. But, I mean, you know, she captures the essence of the picture quite beautifully. You know, these privileged well-to-do people in their lives, and how they can only eat prime beef, imported foie gras, and selected French fromage. And, you know, they want only the best schools and foods money can provide for them and their progenitors, hopefully for this Solcita Jr. and more to come. Yeah, it was just a fantastic poem. Excellent take on the prompt. The great read, Bobby.
Thank you, Gray. Thank you. And Pam.
Yeah, I thought this was, first of all, a wonderful read there, Bobby. I like that she tells the story of this couple who's extremely wealthy, and that to me that it's clever and it's kind of humorous in its way, but it also makes a great social commentary in the idea of greed and gluttony. But I like that the greed and the gluttony doesn't just, you know, like she doesn't just focus on the eating part of it, but rather in all areas of life, they want, you know, way more than they need. And, you know, so just really excellent write, and I enjoyed this very much. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, and the picture is very interesting. Apologies for anyone's fault who's listening who can't see the picture, but there's a couple very, very well-dressed guys sitting in the chair, girls standing up, and they have little kids, and the kids are interesting because they're almost too small, especially there's a baby sitting, which is on the man's chest, which is almost legs, which is almost doll size, but their legs are huge. And it's a very interesting take, almost like his people are, you know, not only are they growing up, but they expand with, you know, with life, with everything that they indulge in, is almost his take that he's saying. It's just kind of interesting the way that he has them and shows the little kid is very interesting to me. So, thank you, Pam. Great observation. And Lou, I don't think I've asked you yet.
No, but can you hear me? I want to make sure I'm not muted.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. You know, when I looked at this picture after reading the poem, you know, it made me think of all the people who are wealthy, how they take these family photos. You know, they wear their clothes and their jewelry and their suits, and they dress the kids as best as they can to have these pictures painted and put inside their home. And then, of course, you know, ojalá de Dios quiere, if God is willing, you know, they have dreams just like everybody else. And they hope that their children will grow up in these, will listen to these and, you know, grow up like them. It, you know, have the wine, the best food, the best schools that they can provide. And, you know, hopefully that they, you know, that they desire that they grow up in this environment and keep on the, what do you call it, tradition of the money going through the family, the red, you know, the red bloods, the blue bloods, whatever. I thought this was well penned. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that is very interesting. You know, it is funny. I've seen people, and you know, I might be insulting people by saying this, but I never understood people that have pictures of themselves like hanging around. I just never got that. And we actually did that for my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. We took my sister, and you know, her family, and me and my wife, and my kids. And we went out. We got a professional picture done and got it framed and all that, and we put it up, and it was really nice. They liked it. You know, I thought it was a nice thing for their 50th wedding anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, sadly, they both passed away, and now we have this. I have this picture in my house. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with this thing? It's like a professional picture. It's really nice, but, like, I want to hang it up, but what am I supposed to do with it? You know, it's like, I don't want to throw it away because we spent a lot of money on it. It's a nice picture, but it's like I enjoyed your comment about the wealthy as well too. You know, we were lucky enough to have my son go to a private high school. Spent a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It was tough on us, but I wanted to give him the best. And he would always comment, like, you know, he would see some of these rich kids there who weren't doing well at the school, but they were they were bought there, you know what I mean, anyway, and some people would have, you know, three kids at once in the school, and he just, you know, it was, you know, nauseating to him just to see people who don't appreciate, you know, the wealth that they might have, right? And there's certainly some people that do, but it is, you know, the class system is very interesting in this country, and you know, too spread out. But sorry, well, off topic, but I thought your comments were very interesting. Bobby, what's going on? I know you got lots of interesting thoughts over there.
I really like the way it speaks to it. It just it reminds me of the sense of entitlement so much in this country, where people think and people forget that money is an abstract. Money isn't good for a damn thing except what it can get you, and it can't buy you happiness. It may make me miserable a hell of a lot easier to take, but it's an abstract. It's not good for anything in itself. And people who pursue wealth just for wealth's sake just are lost in the, you know, they wealth, the money to them has become, it's become their religion. You know, it's their deity. And it's not a matter of how you can enrich your life with it. It's just, it's a means unto itself. And it speaks to how they view their entitlement. And I think it really does a very clever job of and subtle of speaking to that sense of entitlement.
Don't even get me started on entitlement, Bobby. We won't read another poem. I'll be yapping the whole time.
I didn't mean to. Honestly, I didn't.
My goodness, you know. I mean, I believe in the American dream and all that. I really do. I think, you know, if people make it, it's great. But I watch some of these shows with Jay Leno and these guys who have, you know, 70, you know, $100,000 cars that they do and all. And all I can think of
is
like in a garage. Like each one of those cars is somebody's year's salary or some people's double their year's salary. And it's like the amount of good that they could do by just selling those. Again, I'm all for American dreams and people buying Ferraris and all that. I get it, you know, because it's what we all, you know, it's what a lot of us, you know, strive for. But there's also a limit and there's excess. And it's just too bad because those people can, you know, can do so much good with it as well, too. So, all right, I will – hold on. Let me step off the soapbox. And we'll get back to reality here. All right, cool. And Pam is reading my mind as usual because I actually have her poem up, and it is her time to read.
Miss Pam.
Yes, I'm very excited for this.
All right.
So, Pam, I'm going to post this here, and if you would please read it for us, that would be great.
All right. This is Maria Paula and the Lute, and it goes like this. Maria Paula plays the lute, fingers etching green sleeves upon the open air. She wears a dowry of beads, a ruby ring, and a gold bracelet on ankles graced in feminine strength. She has frothy swirls of rich goat's milk and fluffy clouds riding winged horses in a turquoise sky. Her music expresses her heart. Her body is naked. Her soul is bared. Her taut strings are melodic cries speaking in shimmering chords. She cries, "Come to me, O love. I am a vase of pink roses blooming in thoughts of you. I am a bowl of fruit, an offering for your tongue." She continues her song, patiently waiting for true love, the kind that makes her body dance the cumbia, while drums beat a rhythm to seduce a hungry mind. End poem.
Great read. Very, very interesting. So let's go with you, Gray.
We did a beautiful read on that, Pam. And the poem is engaging and it's endearing. I mean, it captures the beauty of this woman with her lute and, you know, her beauty shines through her music and through her soul. And I thought it was just really pretty picture painted.
Thank you, Gray.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely.
I agree. Thanks, Gray. Let's go with Lou.
I thought Pam did a wonderful job in reading her poem. I thought it was very sensual because, you know, she brought out the emotions of the photograph, and that's what I was talking about. There's an energy if you can tap into his artwork, and I thought she caught it beautifully because not only does she talk about the music she's playing, and, you know, I can just hear her playing some sensual Colombian Latina music, and, you know, and her thoughts were, you know, she cries, come to me, oh love. And then I really like this where she says, I am the vase of pink blooming in thoughts of you. I am a bowl of fruit offering for your hunger. She continues in her song. So she's, for me, Pam caught the beauty of this picture. I really enjoyed it. This is a beautiful poem, Pam.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. It is very beautiful, and I love how you I love when you name somebody. So you're making a little story. You're really getting into the character, right, Maria Paula? Unless I'm wrong. Unless he called it Maria Paula, I'm not sure. But I'm assuming you named it, and it was a. I love when you do that. I also like the way you compose the words with the line. Her music expresses her heart. Separating those words to make them more powerful, I thought was really great. And just the descriptions are beautiful. I mean, you really kind of, you know, beautified the entire picture, the entire painting, and really brought a musicality, I think, to it, which he does have a lot of. If you look at his paintings, at least the ones that Captain posted, there's a lot of instruments in there. So he has a lot of music, almost a lot of just people getting filled up as far as filled up with life, right, is what his paintings kind of show. And then he expresses himself with that, like with music, with emotion. That's what, you know, his paintings kind of show me as well, too. I think that might be why, at least how I interpret why he has a lot of music in there. Yeah, great. I enjoyed this a lot, Pam, absolutely. And my captain, please talk to me.
I love the detail you've captured, Miss Pam. Her accoutrement, her dowry of beads, a ruby ring, and a gold bracelet. She is frothy swirls of rich goat's milk and fluffy clouds, riding winged horses in a turquoise sky. I love that. That is so descriptive. That she's her spirit is so elevated in that. And I agree with Dan, your comment that he does show a lot of music. He shows a lot of revelry. Mm-hmm. He shows people enjoying themselves and each other. And I think that is captured very nicely. Her music expresses her heart. Her body is naked, her soul is buried. Beautifully said. A nice piece of work, Pam. Really, really nice. Thank you for the entry. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you very
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely, and I agree with the board. Lou's birds really enjoyed it as well, too. They were going nuts back there about this. So. that's comments of the night. Absolutely.
Right.
And, you know, we can get the flora and the fauna and the humans, everybody commenting. All right. So since everybody in the Liu household is all excited, I think we're going to have her read hers next. So I posted this for you, Lou, if you can read this.
Thank you. I really liked this picture because it reminded me of my grandmother. She was from Spain. She was not thin, but she was not heavy, and she always wore black and black lace when my grandfather died. So this picture just, for some reason, just connected to me. And it is titled, Mi Abuelita Angelita y Sixto. The beauty of amor, glowing sunlight warmth, kisses paint, infused red lips, starlight nights fill darkened eyes, ruby beads move around my beating breast as I gaze your gifted photographs. Lacy dress, gloves later to drop and dress, degustación de copas, de vino, tinto, sharing tacos de pescado, our Sunday meal at the Bullying La Ventas outside, where the bullying, the smell of oxtail and vegetables. Walking past bullfighting bars full of people from the village, journalists talking about events, soaking up cool, sweating cervezas, crowds, laughter, its ambience. Again, repeating bullfight stories. I've never tired of when you demonstrate how you learn to bullfight. Crowds roar, specters yell, ole! Waving white handkerchiefs, besándome, Sixto, in poem. And, you know, the Spanish, it talks about them, you know, them drinking wine, you know, going to the bull, you know. One of the things that I learned was that he was taught in school to bullfight when he was 12. But the art he found, it says that his family found out that he was better at drawing and art than he was at bullfighting. So that's, you know, he went to watch the bullfights instead. He became an artist.
Interesting. Great read. I really appreciate that.
Besándome me, kiss me, Sixto. That she was asking after he tells his stories and winning, she tells him to kiss her at the end.
Very beautiful, very passionate, awesome, a great, great read. Great, let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, you did a beautiful read on that, and the poem was engaging, it was endearing, and, you know, you can feel the passion in it. You know, crowds roar, spectators yell, ole, waving white handkerchiefs, and then besondum, stick still.
Faster, Gray, faster.
Besondum, stick still. But no, it was a fantastic write, an excellent job, beautiful, beautifully done.
Thank you, Gray.
You're welcome.
Absolutely, and I really like the sharing tacos, de pescado, us and the meal. Talking about all the food, it really just, your descriptions are fantastic. I could just feel myself at a little festival or a barbecue or something and just enjoying that. And, you know, maybe because I am one of these fat Americans that he writes about, so I love food.
No, I don't believe it.
Maybe that's why that would
stuck
out with me. But yeah, the descriptions are just fantastic. And just, you could just kind of feel the passion and the like excitement and the enjoyment of life that you put into this poem. And what I thought it was interesting about the picture too is the way it, for those of you, again, I apologize for those who aren't looking at the picture, but it's a woman in what you described, she's in a black dress and she's you know, she does have a Spanish kind of feel to her. But there's a mirror that's very interestingly angled, almost like it's gonna fall over on her. And to me it's almost like her, you know, her looking in the mirror is almost going to like crush her, devour her. That's going to take her over. Almost the way that he has it, because it's a little awkwardly aimed. So it's very, very interesting painting.
Yeah,
great job.
Thank you. I kind of blew it up and I looked at it, and it kind of looks like, you know, a man. If you look the short hair. And, you know, and I didn't think, you know, she, like you said, she went, it was like she's, he's falling into his image, the love she has for him. That's what I got out of it.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you very much. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, wonderful read there, Lou. I love the way you said Ole with so much zest and spirit. I always tell people the one Spanish word I always make sure to know is cerveza, you know, because you never know when you're going to need to order a beer. But I like this all the way through. I thought it was a wonderful tribute to your grandmother and to family, and I really liked especially though the stanza that mentions sharing tacos de pescado, our Sunday meal at Bowling Las Vegas outside. I like how, you know, so many cultures, family time, you know, around meals, especially on a Sunday meal, was so very important, and I thought that was particularly good. And soaking up cool, sweet, sweating cervezas, crowd laughter, it's ambiance, again, repeating bullfight stories. I've never tired of when you demonstrate how you learn to bullfight. You know, it's so wonderful the way as a child, like you have grandparents or parents who will tell stories, and you just you want to hear the same stories over and over again. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Yeah, you know, childhood stories are so, and I don't know if you guys are like this. I actually can't even remember if I was like this, but, you know, I see kids, you know, my son and other people nowadays that listen, but not don't necessarily listen to the stories now, but you'll remember when you're older, and they end up being these beautiful memories of, you know, I remember when my father told me about this, and it's something that I think most people, at least when they get older, they start really treasuring. You know, the family stories or, you know, stories from their parents or their grandparents, even if they don't necessarily actually listen when they're younger. So interesting. Cool. And Bobby?
If you think about it, before written language, storytelling was the way we recorded history. And so storytelling in its way is a recording of the family history. And I also had a family that liked to tell stories. And I think the storytelling that you've done here is so special and so personal. And I think it strikes a chord in all of us who had family that told us stories. And you get to see what they lived and what they experienced before you were around, before you were even a thought. They had their own lives, and they tell you about what they did and how they lived and what they learned and what they experienced and where they went. And it's so special because you realize that they came before you with their own history. You have your history, and eventually you'll be passing your history on to someone else, hopefully. And it is that succession of storytelling and of memories, I think really, I don't know if that's pervasive in today's families, but it certainly was in mine.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And apparently my son is listening because he just popped into the room and said, I do listen to your stories. So, yeah, he's actually listening to the show. proof that he's listening. Yeah, I'm curious, Lou, you said that on the post you said that they were hard to watch. And I can imagine, you know, it's
– Yes.
Did they actually – you know, when you saw them, did they actually kill the bulls?
Yes. It's exactly like you think. There's a bullfighting ring over here in Juarez, Mexico, and she was taking it. Well, you know, to her, this is something she saw all the time, you know, her traditions from Spain. And, you know, of course, when I first went, I was just like, I'm going to, you know, I can't watch them kill the bull. So when they would yell ole, I would yell ole, and I would try to look at the people across and, you know, the atmosphere and, you know, but it is, for me, it is brutal for me as an American. In Spain, it's just tradition. You know, this is what families do. They go out and eat. They go to the bars. you know, drink cerveza. You know, you can smell the food cooking outside, the vendors. So, you know, it's difficult. I only went twice because that's all I could deal with.
Yep.
So.
Interesting. Yeah, my there's an interesting movie. It's a very obscure movie from the probably 70s or 80s called Bless the Beasts and the Children that I remember seeing when I was a kid, which is about hunting and how kind of generations, the differences of that. And this father or somebody trying to get his, like making his son try to shoot something. Do you know that movie?
I haven't seen it.
It's a very...
That was Captain
Tennille,
I believe.
I think you might be right. Yeah, it was kind of an obscure movie. I don't think it's around much more, but it's an interesting take
on
kind of just that.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent.
I also remember, it was funny, you talking about the bullfighting, I hadn't thought about this in years, but when we finally got UHF channels in Chicago, we used to get some of the Mexican stations, and on Saturday nights, my father and I would sit there and watch the bullfights. And one of the things he told me, he said, is the bull is not wasted. He said the bull is butchered and the meat is sold to poor people. So, it is waste. And I was impressed with that.
Yeah, they make food from the bull. That's what, like the oxtails and vegetables, if I was telling you, tacos. Their meat is kind of, it's harder than hamburger. It's tough, because it's a bull.
Upper.
But, the whole place smells like, we say carne, carnitas, which is, I can't say flajitas, you can't translate that into English. But it's chunks of meat, and you all know what flajitas are, so I don't need to explain that.
Yeah.
And, and you would just smell it, and you would buy the food before you would go and eat. There's no air conditioning. It's an open dome, so it's...
It's an interesting cultural aspect, and I don't think most Americans understand it.
No.
I don't think most Americans understand the UHF reference you said either, Bobby, but that's okay. I remember those stations.
Oh, Daniel, that was mean.
I remember UHF channels. I was there too. I'm just saying, it's those are older things. Cool.
Well, thank you, Daniel, for sounding the obscure reference warning.
Exactly. And we're going to stick on this topic because we have a poem by Gray called Just Fodder that hopefully he will read for us.
Okay, this is by Gray I. Smith and it's called Just Fodder. One by one the matadors did fall, taken down by the bull of the ball. Why, oh why, did they risk it all to be on the receiving end of the crowd's call, to hold the champion's trophy standing tall, like a bank robber making a withdrawal, stealing fast, but the feeling wouldn't last, as they were just fodder for the bull's cast. End poem.
Awesome read. And let's continue with Lou.
I thought, you can see Gray's personality in the sarcastic humor. I thought this was well penned. For me, waiting for him, the bull to be stabbed, or for the bullfighter to be gored with the horns of the bull, picking him up and tossing him all over the place, and it's true, and then you see them standing there with their swords after, they kill the bull or, the money, there's money in this. But I thought this was, it's well pinned, it's enjoyable. I enjoyed it, Gray.
Thank you, Lou.
Excellent. Thanks, Lou. And Pam?
Yes, I absolutely enjoyed this. This was fun. It was a clever brevity. I liked how it was, it delivered the humor really well. I liked how it was about that price we pay for that, like, say, 15 minutes or so of fame and fortune. It made me think of the other day I was joking around with my daughter and told her that we should go to the running of the bulls sometime in our, like, be in the running of the bulls sometime in our life. And she said, you can be in the running of the bulls. I'll be on the sidelines cheering you on. This is a great fun right, Gray. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I appreciate that.
Yeah, the rhyming was really fun. It was spot on, Gray, I thought. And what intrigued me was the why do they risk it all to be in the receiving end of the crowd's call? And you know, how many things are there today that are like that? You know, I think of American Gladiators, right? Or what's that new stupid show of the one out now? It's mini golf, but it's kind of like American Gladiators at the same time. Like, why do people do these things to themselves? It's just for the fame and fortune, right? Well, why do people take dumb Snapchat, you know, pictures that, you know, they're going to almost fall off a cliff to take, you know, just to have a little bit of fame, you know? Yeah, the things that people will do to, you know, for fame and fortune is really interesting. But, yeah, this is beautiful. I really thought the rhyming and the phrasing was spot on, Gray.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate it.
And Bobby, taking us home.
I agree. The rhyming made it, I don't know, it gave it a level of interest that I think it was free verse it wouldn't have had. It is very a very skilled rhyming. I like the way you fall, ball, all, call, tall. And then the last two, the couplet, was different. I love that. I like that. All of a sudden, you know, you get this little verbal speed bump here. And stealing fast, but the feeling wouldn't last, as they were just fodder for the bolt cast. It's very there's a note of cynicism running through it, which I find interesting, but there's also some tongue-in-cheek here. And I think as a brevity, this really really does a very good job.
Thank you, Bobby. I appreciate it.
All righty. Let's continue on here. Where is my post? As usual, I have kind of lost my track on whose turn it was, so I'll take this one. I don't think I've read for a while. I think I've only read one so far. Yeah, I get too into it, and I forget where we are. But I'll take this one. I haven't read in a while. This is called The Popular Vote, the very interesting picture here. Juan Carlos was looking good, but not quite the way he should. Maybe he had gone a step too far, being the mayor of Bogota. He was due to front the Mapali band, but things could soon get out of hand if he doesn't lose that tash and hair on his chest and legs and everywhere. The people of his great city always wanted a leader who was pretty, someone who was a little bit bolder, looking good in something off the shoulder. Though in his dress, his ass looked big. He had long blonde Dolly Parton wig. Socks and slippers would disappear. Stockings and suspenders he would adhere. Red nail varnish, then the finishing touch. Ready to face the music, thank you so much. The crowd went wild, did waltz, did tango. The dressing up is worthwhile fandango. And when it comes to re-election time, we guess everything will be fine. No harm in singing dignitarian address. Eyebrows pucked, looking his best. End poem. So see, I will, I'll give myself some fodder to and read, give that one for myself to read there. But this one was obviously fun and just playful. And I really like the stories. You know, when I always look for a common theme when we have these poems, Bobby, and this one seems to be kind of fun, lighthearted, if not commentary. And then also, you know, I've seen kind of little stories and people creating characters out of these. So I thought this one was really interesting. And, you know, despite the just kind of lightheartedness, I also kind of think of it as the, you know, almost a deep political statement of, you know, what do people do to get to power, right? What are they willing to actually, you know, do? How much are they willing to sell their soul or sell their self or just you know, do whatever they will do whatever is possible. And that's almost kind of what I got out of this. It was very interesting and fun and great rhyming for Kenny W. So awesome. Nice job. And I don't think we've seen him on the contest before, so thanks, Kenny, for joining. And let's go with Pam.
Yeah, I always appreciate and enjoy Kenny W.'s writing. What I find of interesting about this picture, it amuses me because, you know, this guy, he's dressed in a dress and he's posed, you know, all feminine, but yet he still has chest hair and leg hair, which makes me think that this might be the first time he's ever tried on a dress. And I think, I like how Kenny created this character. A wonderful rhyme and flow. I really like the people of his great city. Always wanted a leader who was pretty, someone who is a little bit bolder, looking good and something off the shoulder. So he gave them exactly what they wanted. So, you know, just an excellent write. Clever, fun, and very well done.
Yeah, interesting. And, you know, the artist's use of size is interesting. So in this one, I find it interesting that the mirror is very small. And the way that the person's looking in the mirror, it's almost kind of like he doesn't want to see himself like this, you know?
Mm-hmm,
So it's just kind of almost an interesting commentary. I'm not sure, you know, where he was going with the character, but it was interesting. Lou, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, there's different types of things that people are attracted to. You know, what to vote for. Do you want to vote for somebody, he's dressed, it says he wants to be the mayor. And, you know, and I guess he's trying to decide should he go out in this dress or not. What I like was he's in this dress, but it looks like he's got man slippers and ruffle socks on. But, you know, and you're right, he's looking in the mirror, and it doesn't look like he likes what he sees, because if you look at his facial expressions, it looks like he's questioning whether he's making the right decision and wearing an off-the-shoulder dress and jewelry. And it says, because what he wants to do is, you know, Pam brought that out, that the people of the great city want a leader who's pretty, someone a little bit bolder, looking good, something off the shoulder. So, you know, he's making a judgment call whether he should wear the dress or not. Different types of things people vote for are different folks, different strokes.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the people always wanted a leader who was pretty. So, okay, fine. You want somebody to be pretty? Here, I'll be pretty for you. Just vote for me, whatever. I'll do whatever you want me to do. And then he's like, wait a second. I don't know why this came to mind as an obscure reference, but I forget who the leader was. It might have been Khrushchev. There was this kind of very famous awkward of a rock concert in Russia, and I forget who the leader was that kind of came out and started like pretending to dance and clap along really awkwardly. I forget. I don't know if anybody remembers the reference I'm saying, where he just came out and looked just like a complete fool. And it's almost like, you know, hey, yeah, whatever. These guys want, you know, somebody young. Let me show you I'm young. It's who was the one a few years back in the United States that they said he was very meek and timid, so he started like yelling and screaming, and that just like ruined his career. Does anybody remember who I'm talking about with that obscure reference?
No, not too sure.
That's all right. But anyway, it's just kind of interesting what people will do.
Exactly.
Excellent. And Gray, I don't think I asked you, right?
No, I thought you did a wonderful read on it. And I really liked the flow to his poem. I mean, it had a fantastic flow to it. You know, you can picture all this as you read it. And I thought it was just a fantastic presentation of a poem on the subject of cross-dressing. Just beautifully done.
Thank you, Gray and Bobby.
When I posted this, there's in each contest, there's somehow there seems to be one prompt that when I post it, I always wonder who's going to use it and what are they going to do with it. And this one was the one for this contest. I looked at it and I went, no, I got to put this in here. And I like from the look of the picture to me, yes, I did notice he has the man slippers and socks on, so he isn't quite altogether in his finery. But to me, the look he's giving himself in the mirror is he's being coy. And it's like, oh, if someone were looking at me, what would I look like? And that's why he's glancing to the side, trying to capture an unposed glimpse of himself in his finery. But technically the poem is beautifully structured, great storytelling. I love the fact that they said red nail varnish, which is a very old term. I use nail lacquer myself, but the red nail varnish, I love that term in there. I think that lended a little bit of a different a flavor to it, but the off the shoulder. I really like the storytelling in this and the ending and the fact that Bogota was okay with having a mayor that was, he wasn't hesitating to walk on the wild side and explore his feminine side.
Excellent. Thanks, Bobby. Great comment. And let's move on. Let's continue with you. I think it's your turn. One by Paul Brott that I just posted.
I'm sorry, whose name did you say?
I'm sorry, I said Bobby. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all right. I didn't hear that either. Okay, here we go.
Maybe I didn't. I don't know. Maybe I just thought it. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's an overcome. We have the Botero Quartet by Paul Brott. Calling themselves the Botero Quartet, priding themselves on each minuet, the voice of Colombia, through a wee bit rotund than any quartet in life you've yet met. They played weddings and holidays, from Botero to Cartagena, songs of their culture, ballads for ballerinas. They wouldn't ask for money. Applause meant a fun day for Colombians and a few from Argentina. And they played Guantanamera. Yes, they played Guantanamera, Guantanamera. Oh, they played Guantanamera. End poem.
Great read, Bobby. There you go. You got into that one. and this is fun. And there's been some really great rhyming that we've had tonight, I've noticed as well, too, which has been great. It's really, I think, celebrating the musical qualities that he has in his paintings. I think that Paul really brought this to life, really got into the painting and came up with really neat characters here. So I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was great. Pam, let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought that was first of all, a really great read there, Bobby. I love the enthusiasm. Daniel, I have to agree with you. When you mentioned how the rhyming of the poems throughout have been really highlighted the musicality of the rites. I really thought this was a wonderful story about this musical quartet. I liked this all the way through, but especially that middle stanza where they mentioned songs of their culture, ballads for ballerinas. They wouldn't ask for money. Applause meant a fun day for Colombians and a few from Argentina. You know, it was, to me, just a wonderful, upbeat celebration of culture and music. So very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. And Gray, what do you think?
I thought you did a beautiful read on that, Bobby. But, you know, the poem is engaging and intriguing. I especially like that last stanza that Bobby sang there. Yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic take on the prompt.
Yeah, Bobby, I was picturing you kind of, you know, with the snapping your fingers, one above your head, one behind your back, and kind of dancing around as you were singing that last stanza there. So great read.
Bailar.
That's right. All right, and Lou, it's your turn.
I really loved the way Bobby read this. I enjoyed this whole thing. This quartet that is playing their own music from their culture. And, you know, usually with most quartets and stuff like that, when they play music, there's usually their instrumental cases, violins open and stuff like that where you can throw in money. And right here, you know, she noticed that there was no money or any type of a way that you would pay them. And she brings it out in the thing that they played this music for fun. They didn't want to, you know, that they did it for fun. And I really love how Bobby says, and they played Guantanamera. That was just fantastic, Bobby. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And Bobby, I know you did enjoy it because you read it so great and you added it to the finalist list. So you must have really enjoyed this one.
Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Actually, I love
that
song. Yeah. I really enjoyed what Paul Brott did with the illustration. I mean, created a story line, created a background for it. This is a great example of a crisis. It took these four characters in this Botero painting and created a story around them, and it was fun. I mean, ballads for ballerinas, they wouldn't ask for money, which, as someone mentioned, there's no cases opening, no cases open around them for contributions. So they're doing this for the pure joy, and you felt that in the writing. So this was a great piece, a really fun. Thank you for letting me read it. I enjoyed myself probably more than I should have.
Hey, we're all family here. You're supposed to enjoy yourself.
Okay. I really got to get over the shyness of my...
There you go, right. Hey, that's what you Marines are known for, your shyness, right?
Yeah, that's all that me all over.
That's right. Cool, so let's continue on here. We have one by Greg Milhorn, The Garden Club Ladies. Pam, if you would give that one a read, that would be great.
Absolutely. All right. The Garden Club Ladies by Greg Milhorn. The Garden Club Ladies are pleasingly plump, with firm-feeling breasts and a great big rump. I still hear their laughter down through the years, saying as they gardened, it was music to my ears. They gave me a home. As my folks passed away, I felt like a poor orphan on that dark and sad day. Protecting and loving me, they made me their own, being very well cared for until at last I was grown. To me, they were royalty, these plump sisters of grace, thinking ladies in waiting, bringing a smile to my face. They were never concerned over extra pounds of weight, these voluptuous beauties forever changed my fate. The ladies are priceless, like a jewel or a gem. It was a blessing of God by placing me with them. End poem.
Great job, Pam. And another fantastic characterization and story and rhyming. So we're getting a lot of that tonight. Lou, let's start with you.
I thought Pam did a fantastic job in reading Greg's poem. I liked how, you know, this picture, it just looks like, you know, they're taking a picture for a garden magazine or something. At least it was to me. You know, you can see all the hoses and all the different instruments that the ladies would use to work in their garden. I really liked how he said that they took him in, that, you know, that his folks passed away and these garden ladies took them in and cared for them. You know, that he enjoyed the voluptuous beauties and that they were priceless. And, you know, and to me, I love the storytelling of this, how an orphan was taken in by all these fancy garden ladies. That made me smile. I enjoyed it. Good storytelling.
Excellent. Thanks. Thanks, Lou. And Gray.
Yeah, I thought you did a wonderful read on that, Pam. But, you know, the poem is, it's just kind of, you know, on the subject of these garden club ladies that these ladies shine as brilliant as their girth is wide, filled to overflowing with love to give. And, well, bravo. Excellent, right?
Thanks, Gray. Yep, excellent, right? An excellent read. And you did get to read it, Pam. What are your thoughts? Are you mutating, Pam?
Is she muted?
She might be. That's okay. We can come back. Maybe she.
Okay.
I'm
not
sure.
That's
okay.
I just got dropped for some reason. But I really enjoyed this. Right. It had great rhyme and flow. I love the story it told, and I love how that it's about that inner beauty that he saw in those women who cared so much for an orphan child. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, and yeah, Bobby, you know, the artist that you pick, because Bobby really picks all the contests and so forth. It really interesting always the way what it brings out in people, you know, and what people get out of it. But you really pick things that people get very interesting ideas out of, I think. What did you think of this one?
The poem, I loved the interpretation of the artwork. And as I was listening to it, I read all these, obviously, well ahead of time. But listening to this one again, I all of a sudden had visions of the story line from the film The Secret Life of Bees, where these this group of very confident women take in this young girl and basically change her life. And the cohesiveness of the group and how special they were. And it reminded me of this, the verse reminded me of that story. And again, also, I also agree that this is splendid storytelling. I mean, you really get a sense of what is invested in this picture, what's behind it. I marvel at the person takes just a piece of artwork like this and weave it into something as complex and as interesting as the story that we read here.
Yeah, I agree. I think people are really getting creating some interesting characters out of this, out of these paintings. All right, cool. Let's keep going here. And Lou, if you could read this one by Proxtem, called A Quiet Hour in the Park.
A Quiet Hour in the Park by Proxtem. She sat on her mother's lap while her brother stood by, and the dog observed that scene. looking familiar with a feeling that everything is obscene. There has to be a way to make them cupcakes without a decay-inducing obesity. There has to be a way to pass an hour in a park without the need of gluttony. Now, that would be splendid and stark. I hope I haven't encouraged no mutiny. End poem.
This was a fun, fun little take. I like the point of view of the dog watching everybody eat, right? So you just sit there and you're eating. I say that all the time. Like, how bad do I feel that I'm stuffing my face and this poor dog is staring at me like dying of starvation, and I won't give him food. I think we've all done that. So yeah, great read. Let's go with Gray.
Yeah, you did a wonderful read on that, the youth. And you know, the poem is fantastic. It's you know, it really is engaging. It pulls you through into the scene as, you know, this dog sits on his mother's lap and observes the goings-on around it. And I really liked it. It was fantastically written.
Thank you, Gray. And Pam?
Yeah, I do really like the way this was written. I liked how it reminds us about how get-togethers don't always have to center around overindulgences. And I, too, also like that the dog was watching the scene. So excellent brevity and very well done.
Very cool. And you read it very well, Lou. What'd you think?
What I thought about this was when I was looking at the picture, you know, you see these very well-fed children and animals. They look like they have a lot of money, and it's, you know, it appears. But what made me think was, because if you look at the back of the tree, you look at, like, these people in black or at least, like, shadows of falling down, you know, how one can have too much and the others, you know, too much food or not enough food, you know. And he was talking about this cupcake. Can you make a cupcake that is not fattening? Well, I don't know that you could, you know, because, you know, gluttony can be so many different things besides being fat. It could be the, you know, the greed that you have. And, you know, he's hoping that they, you know, that, it says, I hope I haven't encouraged no mutiny. You know, I'm just wondering if, you know, what he meant by that was, would they change their way of thinking or their way of life? I don't know. I'm not too sure. But that's what I got out of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, the characters that he draws, is their hands are very small. And in this one, their hands are, to me, seem much smaller, especially the woman's, than in other paintings. And it almost makes me think like he is talking about gluttony, because in this one here, the dog is even fat, right?
Yeah.
So everybody in the family is so gluttonous or taking in, you know, it doesn't even have to be food, right, that even the dog is kind of wealthy. And, you know, their hands are too small to be able to grasp everything that they want to indulge in, is almost what he's saying, because these hands are a lot smaller. So it is a very interesting painting, I think. All right, it's getting late. I forget who I got everybody except Bobby, I think, right? Sorry, it's getting very late.
That's all right, and I'll pass on it. Do you think we can squeeze another one in?
I don't know, because we have about a minute and a half left, so I don't want to squeeze it in. Maybe we could talk about next time and thank everybody?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, let's do that. Yeah, thank you everyone for calling in. It's always great to have you folks with the party. Get some great comments, and I think we had more fun than the legal limit allows this time. I'm sure my singing didn't help it. we've got the next contest. It will you'll see us in 2 weeks. The next contest is Frida Kahlo. And she's got some really some really self-critical pieces out there. We've got some pieces, some entries already, but I'm hoping we'll get some more. And after that, I'm going to do a little bit of a departure. And the next artist, a man, is going to be photography. And the photography for anyone who likes these, and I have a passion for this, abandoned properties and abandoned buildings. And this guy has done some phenomenal photographs of abandoned properties and abandoned buildings, and that's what we're going to have next. So dive into Frida Kahlo, see what you can do with her. In the meantime, thank you so much to everyone for joining us this evening. It wouldn't be a party without you. And have a buen fin de semana. See?
Thank you, everybody.
Great
have a great
show.
Night.
Had a lot of fun. Thank you.